since I had graduated from high school, that all of these threads had to somehow be picked up and replaced. Therefore, the second thing that I undertook was that I got a list from the Liberal Party and Republican Party leaders with whom I was in close touch, of all those people, both within the district and outside the district, who could have any influence on bringing me forward by supporting me in the congressional race, this time fortified with the fact that the Democrats would undoubtedly present a weak candidate in terms of the intellectual institutions in Morningside Heights, the lower end of the district, and in terms of the Jewish community on Washington Heights, and especially the Jewish community of Nazi victims and the kin of Nazi victims, who had settled so heavily in Washington Heights that it was popularly called the Fourth Reich, there being an estimated 10,000 families in the area who had suffered so terribly from the Nazi terror. Incidentally, among these families was the family of Dr. Henry Kissinger, who later became such a brilliant and historic Secretary of State. And it is interesting that Dr. Kissinger has told me, as he and I are close friends, that in those days, I was the hero of his mother and father, over, above, and beyond any other American politician, because I was the man immediately at hand who could, in their eyes, do what was, in a sense, the most intimate for them in the issues and matters which so materially affected them. A paragraph. On the list with which I had been supplied, there were 30 to 40 names, and it is and I went about the business of seeing each of them methodically. They ranged all the way from the president of Columbia University, blank, and the president of the Jewish Theological Seminary, Dr. Louis Finkelstein, to a group of merchants on Broadway in the 140th Street area, who were rebellious about local conditions and ready to organize to support some new political personality, this group of independent merchants being led by Morris Freyberg, F-R-E-Y-B-E-R-G, Sidney Lovin, L-O-E-V-I-N, and blank, period. In the course of these encounters, I made not only close political allies, but some very long-standing friends. For example, I walked into the office of the president of Yeshiva University, Dr. Samuel Belkin, absolutely unknown to him, and introduced myself, told him the purpose of my call, and we then had a very extended discussion about morality and ethics in politics, about my views as to my own faith, the Jewish faith, and what influence it would have upon my conduct, my criteria and standards as a congressman. And Dr. Belkin and I, as a result of this very auspicious beginning, became close friends. I subsequently joined the board of the Yeshiva University and was is in many other ways intimately associated with the life of the university, including the foundation and flourishing of the Albert Einstein College of Medicine and many others of its great works. He enjoyed a comparable, though not as close a relationship with Dr. Louis Finkelstein of the Union Theological Seminary, which came about in exactly the same way, with Blank Van Dusen, who then headed the Union Theological Seminary, and with Father George B. Ford, who was then the Catholic chaplain of Columbia University, and was the pastor of an exquisite small church across the street from Columbia University called Corpus Christi. Probably one of the most enlightened Catholic churchmen I have ever encountered. Indeed, in later years, when I was actively shuttling between an Israel fighting for its life and the United States, I took occasion to report my observations to His Holiness Pope Pius Blank. And in that connection, in a private audience, I respectfully suggested that Father Ford was deserving of some advancement in the church. His Holiness then told me that these were matters with which he did not concern himself personally, but that he had heard about Father Ford, that he was delighted to have this confirmation of his good works, and he blessed and gave me his personal missal, M-I-S-S-A-L, to present to Father Ford as a memento of His Holiness' interest in Father Ford. In later years, I had occasion to fall out with Father Ford over a housing project, and then to renew our friendship, but more of that anon. The financing of campaigns, of course, is critical, and it has always been my policy to do that first, almost literally before I did anything else. That is to have a substantial amount in the bank to support a campaign. On occasion, I have personally borrowed as much as $50,000 to get the campaign off the ground. In the campaign of 1946, I had the invaluable and indispensable assistance of my brother Benjamin, who took on the job of fundraising, and for a congressional race in which the chances had to be less than 50-50, raised $75,000 for me even before I really opened up the campaign. This was a very decisive factor in the ultimate success of the 46 campaign. And now in sort of heading campaigns, and first item is the campaign of 46. I have said before, and wish to repeat here, my belief that every campaign has a particular turning point, which is brought on, of course, either by the campaigner himself in some idea or proposal or new technique, or in reaction to a position taken by his opponent. Either is vitally important. Who will ever forget the television debate, the second television debate, or it may have been the first. President Carter and former President Ford, in which President Ford made his enormous gaffe about the fact that the Soviet Union did not control the satellites in Eastern Europe, and the way in which President Carter handled the rejoinder, not permitting his answer to be either sarcastic or simplistic, just striking exactly the right note to reflect that he had in that instant, a better grip on the appraisal of Eastern Europe, notwithstanding his inexperience in foreign policy, than the President of the United States, who'd been living with foreign policy throughout a career of over 25 years. So that in recounting my own campaigns, I will try to pick up with and give a special significance to what I consider to be the turning point in any particular campaign, hoping that this may be of use to others who will be in the generations ahead campaigning for political office. In the campaign paragraph, in the campaign of 1946, there was clearly an unease about the Democratic Party candidate, Assemblyman Flynn, even among the staunchest Democrats, as evidenced by my experience with the Jewish retailers on Washington Heights, to which I've already referred. It's absolutely essential that I exploit this advantage, and I proceeded to do so, until it grew into a full-fledged rebellion. Paragraph. Incidentally, the American Labor Party, in its fight with the Liberal Party, once I had achieved the Liberal Party line, also fielded a candidate, and that was by no means unhelpful. Paragraph. I felt that the most striking way in which I could show that I was not taking the voters for granted, and that was my constant theme, prove in this new post-war world what you're going to do, and don't rely upon drawing around you the mantle of the Franklin D. Roosevelt Seniors, the Al Smiths, the Herbert Lehmans, and having the public assume that because you're of their party, that makes you the best man. The way to do all of that was to bring the campaign to the voters very aggressively, and I found the two techniques to be singularly successful. One was the street corner meeting, replete with questions and answers from the crowd. We got so that I could have as many as 1,500 to 2,500 people attend a street corner rally on the corner of 181st Street and St. Nicholas Avenue, or on the corner of 181st Street and Broadway, and keep them standing for 30 minutes to three quarters of an hour while I spoke, and then another 30 minutes to three quarters of an hour while I answered questions. Questions, obviously, in a thoroughly democratic district, started to be hostile, but I was able to generally turn the crowd around, and gradually, of course, my own partisans dominated in the crowds, having been convinced by these very open and frank discussions. The other technique was the technique of canvassing. We enlisted about 200 young people from high school to go through building after building in a crash program in given areas, night after night, distributing literature and ringing doorbells to say one simple sentence. Support Jack Javits, a new man, a veteran, who'll do something for this district instead of taking it for granted. And the importance of the canvassing was, first, that I engaged in it myself, canvassing buildings personally, and secondly, that the presentation to be made was absolutely standard and would not allow of any deviation, nor of any debate or discussion. It was simply a matter of getting the message home, planting the idea that there was a new man running, and then leaving it to the individual voter to